Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome, everyone, to Behind the Braves, the official podcast of the Atlanta Braves. I'm Ricky Mast, Atlanta Braves digital media content manager. My co-host, Greg McMichael, director of Braves alumni relations and World Series champ 1995 and 1993 runner-up rookie of the year in the National League, Greg McMichael. He'll be back with me next week as we kick off the 2023 regular season for your Atlanta Braves. If you've listened in recent weeks, particularly last week, and you heard the intro last week, you know that I am currently on my honeymoon. So in lieu of a new episode this week, we thought we would revisit an interview from years past. And this was actually one that Greg and I recorded, I believe it was at the 2019 winter meetings in San Diego. So going back a few years, one of Greg's old teammates with the Braves, a Braves Hall of Famer, Javi Lopez. Javi was very kind to have us out to his house. We were out in San Diego for the winter meetings, and he was kind enough. He lives just up the road there from where we were staying. And I remember Greg and I had this beautiful drive up the coast and got to Javi's house, and just what an absolute gentleman he is. And we thought it would be fun to revisit that conversation we had with Javi. So without further ado, here he is, Javi Lopez.
Well, Javi, it's great being here with you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, getting to be here in San Juan Capistrano?
San Juan Capistrano.
There we go. So we're just north of San Diego. We're here at the winter meetings and getting to visit with one of my longtime friends and teammates. And so it's good to be here. We get the chance to do a little location shooting sometimes. So like I told you, we were in Las Vegas with Greg Maddox, and we've had some other people. Jason, we got to hang out with.
Jason Isbell.
Yeah. Isbell Singer.
Right before he went on stage in his trailer. Cool. So we've gotten to do some cool things like that.
Yeah. It's great being out here. We got to spend some time together. Got to play Torrey Pines.
That's played right. Golf never yesterday. Played there, even though I've been here for a while.
Yeah, and I haven't played there, so that was a great time
that
hanging out.
That was a great time.
We appreciate you inviting us in and getting to hang out with you a little bit.
Absolutely.
And we'd love to just talk about what you know, a little bit about your career and kind of what's going on with you now. And So the thing I'm always amazed about is that you don't look any different. Yeah. I was looking.
You're my best friend.
Well, I look at myself in the mirror, and I'm thinking, I got a lot of gray hair, and I think you're 4 years younger than me.
Yeah, I just turned 49.
Yeah, so I just turned 53, so we're pretty close in age. But
so you came out here just to try to find the secret?
Yeah, I know. Out here? Well, I know the secret part of it's being Puerto Rican.
No, and the food. You just got to look at my dad. He's 82 years old. You can count with one hand how many gray hair he has.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
That is. I was thinking back, just, you know, we spent a lot of time together catching, you know, being in the dugout.
Minor leagues.
I was in your country. I played for Ponce. I was telling
my
Ricky.
Hometown.
Yeah, so I don't know. You never got to play for Ponce, right?
Because
you couldn't do that.
I did play for 2 years.
Okay, I told Ricky that they didn't let you guys play for your, because they would buy your contracts, right, down in winter ball?
No, but I was able to play for 2 years.
Okay, all right. So I think at that time you were with San Juan. I was with
San
Ponce.
Juan, that's right.
And we had spent a couple years together. And of course, you were 18, I think, or 19 18. When we met.
Yeah, I started when I was 17.
Yeah, you were a big prospect and got a chance to meet you in Durham. I was wanting to ask you, what do you remember back about those that we had played on some great teams? So you think about the Durham Bulls,
Bulls.
1991, and then Greenville Braves.
We had a really
that good, wasn't a good team.
The that next wasn't
year,
a good team.
Next year,
but then Greenville Braves. I mean, that was solid. Hmm. We end up winning 106 games.
Right, we
and
set a
lost
record.
Lost 42 or something like that. It was unbelievable. That was the time where you were kind of sick of winning.
Right. It was a foreshadowing of things to come, right?
That's right.
I don't think we ever got sick of it, but we won a lot. We just expected to win.
And I remember Chattanooga was right behind us. It was like 98 wins right behind us. Mm-hmm. That's where we ended up playing in the final.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it was a fun year. And I guess you, Melvin, quite a bunch of guys end up in the big league 13, that year.
Well, I was thinking back, and I've shared this with Ricky, we want to do a segment just on the 91 Bulls team. We had 13 guys make it to the big leagues, which was unheard of. I mean, that's half the team. And Mike Kelly.
Kelly.
And you think of Pedro Borbón and
Brian Kowitz.
Brian Kowitz and Brian Bark and Nate Minchie.
Oh, my God.
All these guys that Eddie Perez, yourself, myself, Tony Tarasco.
Tony Tarasco.
Yeah, Ramon Caraballo. So all these guys.
That's right.
They end up being big leaguers.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Now, not everybody had, but several of them, four or five of us were on the World Series team in 1995. So we were wanting to do a segment because I'm not sure that's ever been done before from an A-ball team.
Oh, wow.
For that many guys. I mean, typically A-ball team, you're going to have, four or five guys that make it. Yeah. But to have that many was pretty amazing. And of course, our manager was a big league manager, Grady Little.
That's right.
Yeah. So we had him all over the place. And
wow.
I just wondered what do you remember about that team? Because we want to put together a piece about that. Does there anything stand out from the 91 when you were in Durham and Wes living there in Chapel Hill? And do you remember anything about anything
from the thing is, when I first saw the ballpark, reminds me of the Bull and Durham Bull movie,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which was a film about 4 years before we played there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
2 or 3 years mm-hmm. or something like that. And I was amazed by, I always wanted to be there. I always wanted to play there because, what I heard in spring training is like, you got to play in Durham. It's a really awesome place, awesome town. And when I finally got there, I saw the reason why everybody's so happy playing there. And during the summer, we got all the college students watching mm-hmm. the game. The play was packed every night. And it was fun. I mean, compared to the places I played before, which was Pulaski and Bradenton.
Hey, that's his neck of the woods. That I mean, is.
My dad was a race car driver, and I swear he won a race at Pulaski County Speedway.
Oh, wow.
In 1989, I think. So, yes, that is. But having been to Pulaski, yes, I can understand you not wanting to play there. I get it.
But,
did you ever win a stake? Hit the bull, win a stake? Did they do that?
I never hit the bull. I think Eddie Perez hit it once.
Did he?
I think so.
Well, I remember that if you were player of the game, you got this coupon to go to Chapel Hill, and you got the flying burrito, and you got a free burrito. And I was just newly married, and I won player of the game one night, and I said, honey, we're going to get a free burrito. We're going tomorrow for lunch. And we were excited.
I don't remember that, but I do remember that if you were a player of the week, you get this it was a yellow small car that you get to drive for a whole week.
Like remember. A VW bug or something?
It was something really small, like I can't remember what was it, but it was yellow, and we were hoping that we can get the player of the week so we can drive it all the whole week.
Oh, my gosh.
That I is remember awesome. That.
What do you remember about catching Greg McMichael? What kind of pitcher was he like to catch?
He was slow, slower, and
slowest.
There it is. Stop.
Javi loved me. He had one sign for me.
Oh, exactly. And the funny thing is that when you threw that fastball, like 85 for the hitters, it's like seeing 100 miles per hour fastball because his changeup was you probably had the slowest changeup I ever caught on any pitcher in the big league. I mean, because I caught quite a few, and the change of it, nothing slower than yours. And the whole motion, it tricks a lot of players.
It was funky.
I mean, there's a reason why he stayed in the big league quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Javi was there when I actually learned my changeup. I remember going in Winston-Salem and telling him, and I shared this story on the podcast, but telling him, hey, I want to work on something, and, you know, went throw a bullpen, and I just said, I'm throwing all changeups, just catch these changeups. And him looking at me like, where in the world did that come from? And so he just kept calling. And
yeah, I mean, until
for a long time.
The hitters show that they can hit that changeup. There's no reason to call any other pitch.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say this about Javi. You know, Javi caught me most of my career, and I can say about him, I never worried about him blocking a ball because, you know, I would throw balls in the dirt. You know, if you get two strikes, I mean, I struck out close to one guy an inning, which, you know, is pretty good in the big leagues. But I had to throw balls in the dirt, and so I never had
to.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And he would tell me. But the what's crazy about Javi is that he's such a big guy. I mean, look at him. I mean, he's 6'4", 6'5". You're 6'4". Well, now you are, but you were 6'4", right?
Oh, with the spikes on.
Yeah, that's right.
You can add another inch.
That's right. So 6'4". And, you know, and he's big. And so it's hard for him to get low. But then also you think about blocking the ball and all that kind of stuff. Never had to worry about that. I never had to worry about him bringing, if he had a bat at bat, I never had to worry about his attitude behind the plate. So he was always great about that. He always wanted to do his best. And then as a pitcher, you knew you had a chance to win the game because if a game came up on and he was hitting, he was so clutch that he would get the hit. So, but as a catcher, you couldn't ask for anything better as a pitcher because you knew that, there were guys that if they went 0-for-4 and they were just the worst catchers. You didn't want to throw to them because they're just moping back behind the plate and plus it's just hard to get sometimes a low target when you're such a big guy. But you never had to worry about
today's
that.
Today's days, I see most of the catcher put in a knee down, something that I couldn't do when I was playing. I mean, I remember Pat Corral and Leo, they didn't want me to get on my knees and catch like that. They wanted me to catch normal. And, you know, today's day, catchers, they just sit their butt in the ground and, you know, they stay low. And that's something that it can help a lot of catchers. I don't know about blocking. But definitely to put a lower target, definitely that's a big help.
Well, there was one guy, Benito Santiago was the only guy that I knew that would kind of spread out down on the ground.
And Tony Pena.
That's right, Tony Pena.
And Tony Pena, those two. But, you know, those two guys, they can throw runners out of their knee.
Right. They were pretty good.
I didn't have that great of an arm that they had.
You had a pretty good arm, but you had to come up and...
Exactly. You know, I have to come up.
Yeah.
I know. Well, talking about differences between when you guys were playing and now, I think nowadays guys they rush them to the big leagues a lot quicker now. Like prospects debut a lot quicker. And I was looking back at some of your numbers. And I think you played a few games in '92 with Atlanta and a few in '93 before you were there for full time in '94. What was that process like for you, getting to just a little taste of the big leagues for those 2 years, and then actually, I mean, that's a long time. 2 years, a long time to finally get your chance to really establish yourself.
Yeah. Well, in '92, after I get the taste of the big league, came back the next year, '93, and I was hoping that I can stay in the big league. But, you know, Damon Berryhill and Greg Olson, you know, they were on their contract and they weren't going to let him go to put me in. So it was kind of hard for me to go back to AAA. But once I was there, I was just having fun. And I had a great year in AAA, and they called me up, I mean, half of the season again. Mm-hmm. So after that, you know, that was it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was looking back, as like Ricky, I was just looking at some of your numbers, and it always brings back great memories when I think about, you know, 95 and what 95. Happened, and then I think about 96 and that the great series we had in the NLCS with the Cardinals. Oh. You were the NLCS, you know, MVP, and I look back, and I mean, you batted, he was on base like 60% of the time,
right?
And his OPS was over, you know, was 1.6, you know, and he, you hit over 500. What I was noticing is that Lemke was ticked off because he batted almost 450.
Nobody's talking about it.
But the turning point for me in that series, which was phenomenal, of course, you know, we know what happened. But what we don't talk about enough is that we were down 3-0 to the Cardinals in 96 in the National League Championship. Javi hits a home run dead center to win the game, to put us up in the first game to win it. I think we went, then we won the first game. And then after that, it was like the Cardinals were like, oh, crap. Because,
we have to go back to Atlanta
and
face Glavine and Maddox.
That's right. But we win. I mean, they could have, if he hadn't hit that home run, they could have easily swept us and have been over with. But that was just when we started. And then, of course, we went to New York and just tore up the Yankees the first couple games, and then they flipped it on us, which was kind of weird. But that was an unbelievable series. And of course, he was MVP, and he just tore it up. And we had several guys. Chipper had a great series. Lemmer had an awesome series, but you had a more awesome series. Yeah. I mean, it was phenomenal. And of course, we talked. Brian Jordan was on that team, and Ron Gant was on that team with the Cardinals. Right. So of course, you know, that's bitter memories for them. But you know, you go back and you look at those kind of things in your career, and there's things that you do miss that you don't remember. But when you start kind of reading through, and you always had some really, you had a lot of clutch moments for us, or else we wouldn't have been world champions in 95 and wouldn't have been back to the World Series in 96. But, you know, what went through your head, because it's not an easy stage, you know, playoffs, but yet you always seem to be in a spot where you could do that. What allowed you to be that kind of player?
Well, in those situations, I wasn't thinking about anything. I was totally calm. It wasn't until later in my career when I get into this situation like that where I start thinking a lot and, you know, what if I get the base hit and win the game, you know, awesome. But if I strike out, then I'd be, you know, it's not a good feeling. And that's, you know, later in my career, that's what got in my head, and it was hard to do. And I started thinking about how I did it when I was younger. Hmm. And the only thing I can think of is just my mind was just so relaxed and wasn't thinking about anything. Even if I strike out, I would have been fine, you know. And I guess with that type of attitude, you know, positive things will happen. And, you know, clutch after clutch after clutch, then, you know.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I was reading your book recently, and because I knew we were going to be coming out here and talking to you, so I was refreshing my memory going through your book, and I loved you were talking about in 2003 with that the Nationals were still the Expos, and so they were playing around 20 games in Puerto Rico.
Yes,
and you got to go home and play in front of family and friends on your.
Yes,
what was that experience like? Reading about it in the book was great. So I was just curious to hear what you remember about that and what was so great about it.
Very excited. Very excited to play in my home country, and it was it was very nervous for me playing against, you know, the whole crowd and the whole my whole family was there. The first two games was terrible. I mean, I played good. I mean, defensively, and the team were playing good because prior to go play in Puerto Rico, the Expo were winning. I mean, they haven't lost any game in Puerto Rico. They've been winning every single game at home, and we got there the first two games we beat them. And I went 0-for-4 in both games, and I was like, so like, oh, I wanted to make that crowd, sure, you know, excited. I want to make, you know, I want to make sure I hit a couple of base hits. I wasn't thinking about home runs, and but it wasn't until the third game where I pretty much explode. I hit two home runs. One of them was a grand slam, and it was, you know.
The flags were going.
Where I was pictured, prior to that series, is what happened the last game of that series. Great. And at least I left Puerto Rico really happy.
Mm. That's awesome. Well, that was a great year for you in 2003.
Oh, yeah. I cannot complain about that year. Yeah. It was great. It was something click and from at the beginning of the season, and you know, I carry it throughout the whole season.
And so that was the year, and I was telling Ricky this too as well. We were talking about, you kind of got me off the hook in 2003, because I was with my last year with the Braves prior to being traded in 96, we were facing the Mets, and Todd Hundley hit his 41st home run off of me, a little sinker around the pole. And that was the record for most home runs by a catcher. Well, he had the picture and has me pitching, and he wants me to sign it. And I said, you dog, I signed my stuff. So then in 2003, you break the record. You hit 43 home runs.
I hit 43.
And so now he didn't have the record, so I was happy for that. So I appreciate
I'm glad you didn't sign it.
So his picture doesn't mean a whole lot, mean as much anymore.
That is, for a catcher to even come near 40 home runs in a season is just, it's mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. That you have the, do you think that's a record that seems like a record that could stand the test of time?
I don't know. I every year I keep watching Sanchez from the Yankees.
Yeah.
That guy,
he's pretty good.
He's pretty good. And if there is a guy who can break that record, that would be him.
Mm-hmm.
If he's still healthy and if he play catches all the time, because a lot of the time he hit home runs as a DH or first baseman. But
does it count when he's a DH and he hits a home run?
You have to be catching. You have to be catching.
Because your record is, you had 43.
I have 43.
42 for the record. Is that right?
42 is the record because one of the home runs was as a pinch hitter.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So that doesn't count.
Gotcha.
But if there's a guy, Sanchez would be the one. And I hope all the best for him, but, you know, I'm like, wait until I die.
That's funny. Well, that's good. But you're in good company. When I was looking up, Baseball Reference has like similar players, and I was looking at whose career was similar to yours, the catchers. So Roy Campanella came up, pretty famous Dodger. Jason Veritek obviously had some great years, and you know Jason, right?
I know him very well.
So his was similar and to yours. You know, he won a World Series with the Red Sox, and he won it with the Braves. So I was looking at that, and it's just difficult to hit to be successful hitter as a catcher, because there's so much wear and tear on your body.
Yeah.
I mean, how hard was it throughout the season when you're catching, you know, you're catching 6 out of 7 games because you had to have a day off, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you just can't do it every day. As strong and you know, a specimen as you are when you played and all that, you still had to have a day off just for the mental and physical grind. How much more difficult is it for a catcher, do you think, than any other position for a 162 game schedule?
It is definitely hard. I mean, but the way I was, the way my mind works when I was playing was like, if I don't play good offensively, at least I can do something good to make it up defensively, and vice versa. And I was trying to balance everything, you know. Not a good day offensively, okay, let me make sure I can catch good, you know. And if I don't catch good, let me make it up with my bat or something. That's pretty much throughout my whole career. That's the way I was thinking. and nothing, man. And away from the game, you know, nutrition, workout, you know, in the off season, you just gotta have a good balance and work hard, because it's a long season, and if you don't get prepared during the winter, then you know you're gonna pay the consequence throughout the
season. Well, I never saw you come in out of shape.
No,
you're always in shape.
I always hire a personal trainer, and we work out throughout the whole winter, and it was the best investment I can ever
done. Do you have stock in any ice companies?
Ice.
We always had ice on ourselves, right?
Yeah.
With my knees.
You know what? I was trying to avoid ice, you know, in front of the trainers, of the coaches.
Right.
You know, if I ice at home. Nobody can see me.
Yeah. Nowadays, they'd stick, throw you on the DL.
I know.
Than anything,
they,
right?
They got you on the scope. Like, oh, he's icing his arm. Okay. Start looking around who's available.
you caught Kent Merker's no hitter, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I was curious from the catcher's standpoint. Like, I don't know about the pitchers and the nerves of the other guys on the field, but for the catcher, did you feel, is there extra pressure there, especially as you're getting closer to that ninth inning?
Didn't know he was throwing a no hitter until the seventh inning.
Okay.
And the reason why, this is funny, I was frustrated because I had three strikeouts in a row. You know, offensively, you didn't do well. I'm like, okay, well, let me concentrate as a catcher, you know. But I wasn't paying attention to the scoreboard. I knew it wasn't until the seventh inning when I look up and I saw zero. I'm like, okay. So after that, then I was thinking, I'm like, okay, every time I call a pitch, I was praying, please don't get a base. And, you know, and we were facing the Dodgers, one of the best hitting team during that time.
Yeah. You Eric Karros, Mike Piazza.
I mean, it was a really, really good lineup.
Hollinsworth was rookie of the year.
That's right.
I think they had good pitching staff, which we battled out with them. There wasn't high scoring games anyway.
Yeah.
But that was a great game. I was there that night, and I remember the last play where he kind of snagged a little backhand and kind of ran over and flipped it. But yeah, it was pretty. No, that was the only one we got to see.
Yeah.
Well, outside there was one in '92. There were you up at that point when Pena, Merker?
No,
and
I wasn't.
Wallers? Okay, because that was towards the end of the season, I think.
That was before I got called up. But no, he pitched phenomenal that day, and he's not that he wasn't striking out everybody, but you know, they just couldn't hit the ball hard. A lot of ground balls.
Mm-hmm. Learned his changeup.
Good changeup, great curveball. I mean, he had it all that day.
And he threw hard too.
Oh yeah,
Merker was one. Of
oh
the,
yeah,
he had the, one of the more live arms on our
team.
His
upper 90s. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So three-time All-Star, we mentioned the NLCS MVP, Silver Slugger in 2003, and Braves Hall of Fame. That's of those, or one of those, which one of those, how would you rank those? What's the most special one to you, do you think, of those accomplishments?
Well, personally, I mean, the World Series, I mean, anybody who plays in the big league at one point, they would like to have a ring in their finger. You know, that's the main goal once you start the season, you know, be able to play in the World Series and be able to win it. And I accomplished that in 95. And then second definitely was the Silver Slugger, because that's kind of like a personal goal that I had in mind, you know, for a long time. But my Piazza, it was killing me. I mean, I had a pretty good season in 98. I mean, I hit 34 home runs and 100 RBIs, but still wasn't enough.
And sometimes those awards are objective, because there's so much objective. Like if a bigger market, a guy of an LA or the New York, whatever, they get unfairly, I think, get a little
more.
Hey,
he beat me out of the rookie of the year. So, I mean, I came in second. Piazza, I came in second to him. And
there you go.
He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated by the All-Star break. So you knew you didn't have a chance. But yeah, it was tough. You had a tough guy to battle there.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. But Todd Hundley had some good years in New York that you had to battle. He had a couple good years.
Yeah, he actually played with Piazza together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was on that team, but some good catchers
there. But, yeah, so the Silver Slugger, Was my second.
Cool. Yeah.
Catching the no-hitter would be third.
Catching the hitter, yeah.
There's not been many of those.
No.
In the Braves organization.
We haven't had one since then.
That's right.
No. We've come close a couple times, but yeah, it's still the last one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want to go all the way back to you first learning to play baseball in Puerto Rico, because again, I was just really enjoying the book. And going through it, and because I read it when you first published it a few years back, and it had been a few years, so I went back through it, and I loved the story of the first time you played baseball as a 7-year-old, and what happened when you hit the ball for the first time, and where you went.
We were playing in a basketball court, and once I hit the ball, I have no idea what to do, and some of my friends told me you got to run to first base. First base was it was a pole on the side. It was a volleyball pole. And that's the first base. Underneath the basketball hoop was second, and the other pole, the volleyball pole, was third. And underneath the other basketball hoop was a home play. So I hit the ball. I had no idea what to do. And, you know, it's just like anybody else whoever start playing baseball. You just don't know the rules. You just don't know how to do it. And my friend invited me to play. I have no idea what was about. And you just have I remember it was a rubber red ball and a broomstick, or kind of like a broomstick. It was actually like a shovel stick, which was a little thicker. And we were hitting with that.
And that's where you learned to play on the first plate on a basketball court.
That's the first time I ever played baseball.
Stick ball. Yeah. It's like New York. That's what they call stick ball. Maybe a little smaller, but so it sounds like.
First time ever.
That's great. Well, that's good. So how are you enjoying it out here in California?
Well, it's really nice. I mean, we got beautiful weather. It's a lot to do around here. My family's happy, which is most important. But, you know, as you know, I miss all my friends in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we miss you too.
Yeah, definitely. I miss all my friends out there.
Play a lot of golf together.
I lived there for 23 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have a bunch of group of guys that that I left. And that's exactly what I don't have here.
Well, we appreciate you coming back to Alumni Weekend this past year. So getting to be a part of that.
And absolutely.
We've got, I think one of the things that we're going to be doing is we're going to be changing how the Hall of Fame, you know, when we do the Hall of Fame instead of January, we're going to try to put that on Alumni Weekend, hopefully.
Okay.
So maybe you can continue to be a part of it. And I know you've done some stuff with Los Bravos. And so just know, you know, you're always welcome to come back. And we always love having you, of course, being a Braves Hall of Famer now. And some of my old teammates, TP, just got inducted. You know, you're in there, Andrew, David Justice. So, we've got a good group of guys there, and we always love having you back. But it's been fun visiting with you.
Yeah. One quick question. Yeah. What are you doing for the holidays and New Year's Eve? Do you guys have a big plans for the holidays?
Well, I was thinking about going to Puerto Rico, and then once I look at the plane ticket to go there from here, we were like, no. We're going to stay here.
Okay, all right.
We're going to stay here, and I have my other two sons flying from Atlanta. And they're gonna spend New Year's here with us.
Okay, so that's what Greg was telling me at breakfast this morning about when he played winter ball in Puerto Rico and the holidays down there and how much fun and the celebrations and all that.
Oh yeah, it's
the pig roast.
The pig roast. I mean the music. It's a big party every night, and you just feel the Christmas spirit almost every day out there.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic.
I do remember I was telling, because Ricky, I was saying that I was there for Thanksgiving, and then I was there for Christmas, and I was there for New Year's. And then, so one of my coaches was Jose Cruz.
Cheo Cruz,
Cheo Cruz. And then one of the other coaches that were there, they invited my wife and I over to be a part of the festivities. And of course, it's not just the holidays are a big party. I mean, in Puerto Rico, they celebrate the Puerto Rican holidays, then they celebrate all the American holidays as well.
Oh yeah,
and it's just like
they have any excuse to celebrate.
I love it.
It's an ongoing party.
We got the Christmas Day, the New Year's Eve,
Three Kings. Is that what Three Kings?
The Three Wise Men.
Yeah,
that's January 6th, and then we have what they call Octavitas, which is 8 days after the Three Wise Men. You know, before the Christmas is completely officially over.
Wow.
So 8 days after basically the Three Wise Men, it's you know, celebrating Christmas and, you know, same thing, parrandas, which is, you know, music.
Oh, yeah.
And then, yeah.
Dude, this sounds like heaven to me. I'm moving. You need to find a new co-host. That's where I'm going. That sounds awesome. I love it.
Yeah, it was a fun place. But, yeah, and they shut down everything. I remember wanting to go to the mall and do something. They're like, oh, no, it's closed. They're having a parade, you know. They're celebrating this. They're celebrating that. They just shut down, and they're, like, having those parties. It was good. Party. It's a good place. I got good memories there.
No, yeah. They find any excuse to make a party out there.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, we appreciate you letting us come into your home.
Absolutely.
And hang out with you for
I'm
a little bit.
Glad you guys were able to come here and visit me.
Yeah, thank you so much.
This Absolutely.
It's beautiful out here. It's my first time in this area, and it's just, it's now my second favorite behind Puerto Rico, which is where I'm going to head.
There you go.
Thank you so much, Javi. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. All glad right. you guys came.